welcome to Tell Me Your Story. It's great to have you with us as we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. I almost forgot. And then we also stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive the programs, podcasts. That's right, we have them available for you. In a plethora of colors, shapes, and sizes to fit your every need. You just have to scroll through each year if you want. You can go by year, going back to 2007, or you can go to the long list and go from top to bottom, and over 500 interviews plus even other interviews on other pages of the website. So please check out our guests. We will link to our guest's website as well, and we'll give you that website as we continue moving forward here on the program. I do have to take a moment to pause, and I cannot express, and this sort of dates the program, but that's fine, my greatest admiration and gratitude to the California firefighters and the work that they have done, not only in the month of October of 2017, but even in the summer, July of 2017, when our home was in the path of a wildfire. We had to evacuate for the first time in 11 years, 10 fires. This was number 11. And thank God our property that we were renting was spared. So I can't, it's not a job I want. I don't know. No, thank you. Give me a nice cozy fireplace in the winter in the snow of Alaska or something. I just, and again, my heart goes out to, and prayers also to the people who not only have lost their lives and the families of those, but also for those who have lost their homes and all of their worldly possessions. And I don't know if this would even help, but, you know, it gives you the opportunity for a fresh start. I know a great deal of memorabilia is probably lost, memories from the past, family heirlooms and so forth. But as long as you have your family, that's really the only thing that's important. And you can start again and create new memories and start from this point. This is January 1st of a new year for you, whatever date that might be. Today is going to be a fun day. We're going to have a lot of fun here seeing through our expanded human capacity. And I'll tell you that when we have these kinds of disasters, these challenges. So four major hurricanes battering the eastern quadrant of the United States in during hurricane season 2017. Wildfires up and down California. We've even had during wildfire season, and they used to call them forest fires, but they changed that, and appropriately so, I think. Even up in Oregon and Washington, they had them in Alaska. I remember one year when we were in the midst of our winter and Australia was ablaze. And it's just, I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. And I'm sure my parents are the same way, they being in their 80s. But one of the things that we're going to talk about is transparency, what that has to do with seeing through our expanded human capacity. The capacity that I was referring to, of course, was the capacity for compassion, understanding, and support for one another when we're going through these kinds of things. And we're going to talk about that and many other things, I am sure, with Penny Pierce. She is the author also of the best-selling book, Frequency. Frequency and transparency. And I'm wondering if your next book, Penny, will be Lucidity or something like that. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me back again.
This is extraordinary. Transparency. Let's define some terms here. What's the definition of transparency in the context of this work?
Yes, I'm defining it in two ways. One is the first way we think of it generally, which of course we're seeing in the news practically every day now, is sort of freedom of information, access to the truth, feeling like we're not being lied to. So it has a lot to do with information. And I think this is because we're kind of at the end of the information age and we're still thinking that way. Mm. So I call this horizontal transparency. Okay. So it's in the physical world. It's in this world.
And part of the problem, though, with that is the fact that you have to trust the source you're getting the information from. And many, many statements have been made over the last few years questioning the authenticity, the accuracy of many well-respected and followed sources for decades.
Yes.
And maybe there were some mistakes, but it's like, okay, I don't know that I'm going to trust somebody on Facebook or Twitter or or some other social media or the man on the street who is the only one who saw what happened, and I don't really have the information vetted. And we've had that problem with wildfire information right here in the Santa Barbara County area, where people will say things and then we'll find out that, well, it wasn't true. For example, when we were evacuated, you know, they came pounding on our door with sirens blaring, saying, you've got 10 minutes to get out. We packed everything up. Fortunately, we'd been preparing, and out we went, because these people were authority figures. They had the credentials to support that. So if I was to report that to someone else, I hope that people would trust me to say, be telling them the truth. But then when you get online and people say, oh, this is happening and that is happening, and it frustrates the authorities to no end. What's the second definition?
Well, just to comment on all you know, I think that the horizontal kind of transparency has so much to do with trust. And the idea of trust is always based on authenticity. But, you know, of course, today with the internet and fake news and everybody just causing these kind of mob, you know, flows of popularity, it's like, you know, gangs getting together suddenly wherever the main ones go, then everybody goes, and it's not has any connection to the truth at all.
You know, during the Cold War, they called it propaganda.
Yeah, that's right. So we need a kind of a new standard here to get back to, like, what really is accurate, what is true. You know, we have subjective truth and we have objective truth, which is like the laws of the universe. You know, how does life really work? What are the principles? And then what's your own personal truth in the moment, which is always evolving as we grow spiritually, our sense of truth changes as well. So this is all very kind of relative. But the other kind of transparency that I'm focusing a lot on in the book is vertical transparency, meaning that the spiritual realm or the non-physical worlds are seen to integrate with the material world. So in other words, personally, that would mean your soul is in your body. Your soul is in your personality. It's running your mind. You know, this is who you actually are right now in this moment. It's not out there like a balloon up above you, you know, that you don't have a soul. You know, you are a soul. And so there's a realization that's coming on to people, I think, now that, hey, wait a minute, I am the soul, you know, and right now I am, not in the future.
Yeah.
And then that continues on with the idea of feeling, not just thinking, but feeling that the spiritual realm, which is a certain way that energy behaves, you know, it's so harmonious and integrated and based on unity and compassion and a kind of a love where everything fits together perfectly and all of that stuff, that is already in the physical world. It's the basis of matter. Mm. And we don't see that that's always been so because our mind wanders all over the place. You know, our mind projects into the future, into the past, into fantasy realities, into other people's realities. And we're not right on the crosshairs of being in the body, in the now, with the body, mind, and spirit all merged into one thing.
You know, when you talk about vertical and horizontal transparency, it makes me think that here we are in this conversation, you and I, and for the second or third time. And I've always been the type of person, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, and sickness and health, I have always been one to take people at their word. If you tell me something in this context of this interview, I'm going to take it face value that you're telling me the truth. And then there will be those who will say, well, yeah, you're a fool, because unless you check out what she's doing, if you don't fact check, that's the big phrase these days in regards to fake news. If you don't fact check, then how can you be sure that she's telling you the truth? Well, it's because if she's lying to me, if you, Penny, are lying to me at any point along the way, it's not on me, it's on you. Now, if I make decisions that are going to impact my life based upon the information that you gave me, well, then that those decisions are on me, regardless of what I'm doing and who I'm, what information I'm basing it on.
You know, but I see, think here's where intuition comes in and plays
That's
a very strong
role. That's where I was
role.
Headed, yes.
You know, because people can tell you things, and you can have a sense now, a very fine discrimination sense that's coming at this point in our development, where we're becoming ultra sensitive and aware of what I've been calling energy information. You know, it's not left brain information.
Yes.
It comes through the body. It comes through vibration and resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get a sense of somebody where their words are saying one thing and the pictures they're sending telepathically or holding in their field are not matching that, or their own energy doesn't match that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one way. It's, you could call it, they're in a lie, but really they're mismatching. They're not in alignment with themselves.
Yeah. When I went through a program years ago where they talked about these kinds of things, they used the example of an M&M, a peanut M&M, for example, and the structure thereof. You have the hard candy-coated shell, then you have the chocolate in the middle, and then the peanut in the center. And they gave names to each of these in reference to the human being. And it talked about what it was trying to emphasize was the whole issue of our integrity and our values and the way we live our lives. And that then they used another analogy of a piece of cellophane, and that every time we, using your term, mismatch, okay,
mm-hmm.
our internal values with our external practices, if you will, we poke holes in that cellophane. And so every time we do that, another hole is poked, and another one, and another one, and another one, until eventually there may not even be anything left because there's so many holes in it. It's just, it's like a screen door,
know.
Put that on a submarine and see if it, it doesn't mm-hmm. sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So you brought up the very thing that I was going to mention, and that was the intuition and how important that is. And also, with that intuition, and I'm wondering if you've experienced this as well, and it seems to me like in the last few years, we've been fed a lot of information that, has been fact-checked and found to be incorrect. And I'm wondering if you're experiencing this, or your other people you could come in contact with are, they're beginning not only to become weary of this whole little game that's going on, but also they're beginning to step back from the horizontal
mm-hmm.
because the vertical, as you say, we're moving. This evolutionary process is not a it's not a conscious and or voluntary. It's almost subconscious and involuntary. We're going there whether we like it or not, because here we are. And it's kind of like we're going to spin around the sun. Nobody can stop it because that's what the Earth does, this planet that we live on. And
yeah,
people are starting to step back from that and saying, wait a minute, there's something greater here that I'm missing. And I'm getting caught up in something and it's really not serving me.
I think what's behind that is that we've been experiencing for many, many, many years an acceleration of the frequency of the planet itself.
Mm-hmm.
That the Schumann resonance inside the planet has been increasing and so forth. But we feel it as an acceleration of time, of how fast things happen now, of how much data there is to process in this old linear way, of how fast our bodies are vibrating and we're getting overheated and ADD and, irritated. And we're trying to adjust to the higher frequencies on the planet. And I wrote a whole bunch of books on this subject. But what that does to us then is it does make us hypersensitive. It does increase our intuition and our ability to feel more. So many people are becoming actually highly empathic right now, but they don't know how to process what they're feeling to translate it into the left brain and into meaning. So they're getting overwhelmed by the fact that there's a lot of negativity also being released right now. And that is because of the acceleration. because the subconscious mind can no longer pretend that it's invisible. You know, it really has nowhere to hide. That frequency has risen. So fears, which are very low vibration, have nowhere to be stored, you know, out of sight. So they're popping up to the surface. And this is important to realize, that it's a very intrinsic part of personal transformation, that we must clear our clutter. Everything that's, you know, laying over us like a wet blanket, that's keeping us from expressing the soul. You know, my image is more kind of like yours with the cellophane, but it's more like a sieve, where the holes are the places where we don't have fear. And the light can shine through the sieve and come down in and make our personality up, you know, out of a combination of the light that gets through, but also the dark places are the places where we still hold fear and unconsciousness. And those block the flow of the soul into the physical world. So part of the process we're undergoing is to clear fear, open up more holes in the sieve, get the solid, you know, density out of the way, dissolve it, so that we can be purely the creation of the soul and of all souls, you know, the co-creation of all souls. And that's transparency, vertical transparency.
Yeah.
You know, and that is happening whether we like it or not, just as you said, because of the frequency on the planet. What happens, I think, at this point is that some people are like, yay, let's get it, let's have it. You know, I've been waiting for this. You know, I'm sick of having to live in this opacity and in this slowed down version of myself, because it makes you feel like you're suffering. At a certain point, you can't stand it anymore.
Yeah.
Other people are just kind of hitting this idea that their nice, comfortable world that they had fixed for themselves out of fixed beliefs, and, you know, they have their little code of behavior and their cozy stuff all around them that they identify with. Those things are going. You know, those identifications are too small often. And so we're starting to have to let go of some of those. And then the ego jumps in and says, wait, I don't want to die. You know, I want to be the boss and keep running the show. And so it fights, and we go into a kind of a fight or flight modality to protect the old, you know, comfortable way of life. And so, you know, fear mode goes into fight mode, which is kind of narcissism and domination. And look at politics. This is showing up very much in the polarization of the positions and the narcissism of the leaders and so forth. And that's one way. And the other way is flight or freezing up, which is avoidance, basically.
Yeah.
You get things like the opioid addiction that's going on now. Or you get the guy like in Las Vegas who projected his own fear out into the world so he wouldn't have to feel it by getting angry at some big, powerful thing out there.
Yeah.
And then taking out his anger on the world.
It's interesting you bring that up, because my thoughts of, for example, the North Korean leader aren't of fear. I mean, I joke with people, but I'm actually mostly serious, that if he's going to fire on me, you better aim one right at me, pal, because I don't want to survive. All right? I want to be at ground zero. All right? But getting aside from that, one of my thoughts has been, ever since this whole thing started to stir up in the last 9 months or so, 8 or 9 months, what is this guy and his people, what are they so afraid of? Are they really afraid that somebody's going to come in and take over and control them? Because that's the last place I want to go. I mean, you know, you have your nice little kingdom, and you've programmed your people to adore you and worship you as a god. And if you can maintain that with them, hey, I'm not going to argue with you. I don't care whether you've got nuclear weapons or not. That's not how I want to live. That's why I stay here in the United States, you know, kind of thing. But my thought is, what is he so afraid of? And almost looking at it from not a position of pity. Don't get me wrong, but of concern and actually some level of compassion in that. You know, again, something has been fostered in him as well, I'm sure, from his parents.
When you say him, you know, it could be a lot of different hymns.
Well,
you know, they're,
Kim Jong-il in particular.
Yeah, I know. But you know, it could be many leaders. It could
I see
be
what
the,
you mean.
The Las
I
Vegas
see.
Person.
Right.
To me, you're asking why. And I think that it can be a very complicated sort of cause. It can be related to past lives. But
sure.
It's often related to the upbringing in this lifetime, mm-hmm. where there's either abandonment or something happened where they felt unloved for who they actually are at a very deep level. It could be abuse or a lot of things.
Yeah.
But they then have to try to medicate in order to not have to feel that awful terror of annihilation, potential annihilation of themselves.
And I guess.
And I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And so I think that. And then there are the ways of handling that, as I said before, you know, like you've got people who become very wealthy and then they try to control everybody around them. Look at the Harvey Weinstein kind of stuff that's coming into the news this week, where and nobody would say anything about it because they wanted the job. They wanted the money. They, you know, whatever. They didn't want to call him on it, even though everyone knew. It's like the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
And that's happening a lot right now in politics. And the falsity of those attempts of the ego to maintain control are being shown up in the world at this point and being shown to be sort of primitive almost at this point. It's like these things are old. This is, you know, like dinosaur behavior.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who are still stuck in that, they're desperate to maintain that way of life.
Yeah.
And as they get desperate, they get dangerous.
You know, I interviewed a gentleman who holds interfaith gatherings in the Middle East, amongst all of the various religious and philosophical factions out there, over there. And he says one very interesting thing has come out of all of that for him. And he spoke specifically, of course, of the Palestinian and Israeli situation. And he said that the young people that are over there today on both sides, many of them, want nothing to do with their parents' fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't like the Israelis, say the Palestinian youth, and the Israeli youth say you don't like the Palestinians. Well, mom and dad, that's your fight. It's not mine. I want nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. I see that, too, in a lot of the international work that I do. And it's really there is a whole new way of perceiving showing up. Now, we talked about that, I think, on our last show together about the leap of perception.
Yeah.
That we're moving out of this slow, linear way of thinking. Do you know, where you have a past and then present and future or a beginning, middle and end or, you know, cause and effect thinking where there are big gaps in between you and your goal, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas in the new reality, it's all in the present moment, which makes it a spherical kind of thing. The present moment, if you really experience it, it's a ball of consciousness around you. Mm. And that ball changes shape and changes frequency. But really, there's nothing outside the ball. It's just an imaginary focus within the whole unified field, which is our big self.
Hmm.
You know, it's a whole different way of thinking. And I think this is coming in now in dribs and drabs, you know, like the internet has caused a whole different way of thinking about, for instance, business structures. You know, hierarchies are linear. The new structures that are based on spherical perception are flat, where everybody has responsibility and it's a co-creation of a collective group mind, you know, and people aren't doing it for ego. They're doing it because they like working together. It's a whole different thing. And the young people are really embodying this, I think.
There is a new television series based on that in a sense, Wisdom of the Crowd.
I saw that last night for the, yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful idea, And then there's a show about the autistic young doctor whose whole way of perceiving looks, you know, primitive and ignorant to some people who are stuck in their left brain, and very wise to people who know how to be in the right brain.
You know, it's interesting too,
because good ideas coming in.
Yeah, because I've even thought that maybe these folks that are in this world today, whether you have dyslexia or ADD or whatever the acronyms are, or autism and those types of things, I sometimes wonder if they aren't the normal ones, so to speak, and that it's we who must shift to their frequencies and their ways of thinking and so forth, because. Man, they seem to be doing pretty darn well. I have found, too, that even with my own wife, who is dyslexic, how intelligent these folks are who say that they're dyslexic. And I myself, when I have been working with her, when I first met her, she would not read out loud to me at all because of all of the stuff. And I finally, and of course, just from where I'm at, I just gave her the space to work through stuff. I wouldn't try to help her unless she asked me for that help. And now she has no problem reading to me whatever she wants. It's not even a conscious thing for her anymore. It's just boom. And she does that for me and for others as well.
But, I think, it's probably true that a lot of what left brain people think are dysfunctions are actually right brain gifts. You know, they just have not gotten, I've said for years that I've thought that autism was a kind of an indication of a particular soul group that's been incarnating. That's an incredible, the souls are extremely compassionate and wise. It's almost like they're too much for this world. The world in this bridge time is overstimulating to them, and they can't function yet in it, but they're here to hold the vibration so that we can change the balance of energy on the planet. And as soon as everybody starts opening up and becoming more transparent, their little plexiglass shield will just melt away, and they're going to be very much about the new consciousness.
I've even heard, I thought this was a fascinating observation, of another major condition that is afflicting our populations around the world. And it actually made sense to me, again, along the same lines of what we've just been talking about, the observation about Alzheimer's, that it's not a defect. These people are living in the now. They don't have the linear construct that you described. They're just right here, right now.
Yes. The other thing that I have sort of discovered about those kinds of, I don't know what you want to call it, mental situations.
Conditions.
Is that it has conditions. It has a lot to do with people who've been afraid to die. And so what they'll often do is they kind of start rocking in and out a little bit, like getting the toe in the water of the non-physical realm. They've been very attached to the physical and afraid to let go, and they can't understand how it's going to be, it's like, babies rock in and out coming in. You know, they come in for a little while, they go out. They come in for a little while, they go out, and it's probably why we rock babies. But as you are getting ready to leave the physical vibration and move into a higher frequency, you have to sort of get yourself used to it. And I think that a lot of it is, getting more and more comfortable with the reality of the other world so that you can make an easy transition.
I like that. I really do. I have no fear of it. I probably won't experience that phenomenon. But I'm curious. I mean, I am utterly curious about what goes on the other side. There are famous people who pass, and sometimes the first thing that goes through my mind is, I wonder what they're experiencing. What are they doing? What's happening? You know, I really want to find out. Not that I'm ready to precipitate the process of departure, because I've just got too much to do. but it has always intrigued me. And I've gotten some glimpses through many of the guests on this program, as well as some things I've gone through, some sessions with people, that I have nothing else to compare it to. So I just, again, I take that at face value, and mm-hmm. that's my experience. I don't put that on, oh, no, it happens to everybody. I have no clue if it happens to everybody.
I don't think everything's the same for everyone.
No.
But I've had a number of death experiences in my dream state, which were quite real.
Mm.
And I remember at one point in the dream, I was dying, and I decided to go down in my body to see if it hurt.
mm-hmm.
You know, and I just dove down inside my cells and everything to see if there was actually a point of ending. And it was like suddenly I was just floating in space and there was no end point. It just didn't. It's like you blink out and you blink back and you're still you, but it's a world of light. Mm. And it didn't, there was no pain actually in the experience. I've had other experiences where I actually was sitting on my bed, and when I was breathing, one breath, the world dissolved around me, and the room turned into just a bunch of forms of light. And I was a ball of light floating in space with nothing below me. I didn't need support. You know, I was just right in the center. And then when I would exhale, let's say, the room came back again. And then it went away again. Then it came back again. And I was like oscillating between the world of light and the world of form. And it was so interconnected. You could really feel the way that forms materialize out of those inner blueprints of light, you know, and how close we are to that world anyway. We're rocking in and out of it all the time, day and night anyway, you know. So to me, death is not a big deal. It's just another rocking.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's no other side; it's all one world.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
You know?
I had an opportunity to sit in on a program not long ago. I was the guest moderator, filling in for the regular host, and it was a bunch of astronomers as well as physicists. And one of the things that I remember hearing in regards to the universe. You know, we're always talking about our point of reference, for example, looking at the sun or the moon or the stars. And, okay, well, that's up there and that's down there and that's over there to the left and that's over there to the right. Well, maybe from where I'm standing, that might be true. But from the universal perspective, from the big picture perspective, there's no up, down, left, right. It's out there or in here. Kind of thing. In other words, you know what I'm saying?
Everything's in here, actually, because you realize that you are this huge sphere. You know, you have a sphere of influence, a sphere of reality. We already talk about this sphere a lot. And that in the sphere, there are billions of frequencies that are all possible realities.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you place your attention on comes down in frequency and actually can materialize if you keep your attention on it long enough. You take your attention out of something and it fades back into the field.
Yeah.
You know, it's attention that is the key factor here. That's why I think that if we don't learn how to focus, concentrate, get away from our cell phones, you know, and get quiet and learn to meditate and be, that when we die, you know, we're going to have a hard time learning to navigate. If we didn't learn to do it here, you know, it's a disorienting thing to be in the non-physical realm where that's all you have is your attention.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that the perception of where we are and where we're going is I think it is gradually changing. And just by what you were saying before, there is no other side. It's all here. You know, you're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I always love that phrase from the 60s when kids get out of high school and they don't want to go to college because, well, Mom and Dad, I'm going to travel and I'm going to go find myself.
Right.
You know, and it's like,
right.
Sure,
it's
yeah.
It's out there somewhere, I know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. We're talking with Penny Pierce, and she's the author of I almost said another title here, Transparency, folks. Transparency. See through, you're going to be basically able to, seeing through our expanded human capacity. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, and we will be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Penny Pearson. She is the author of the latest work, which is Transparency. She's written a whole bunch of other stuff, indeed, The Intuitive Way. We actually had her on talking about the leap of perception, the transforming of the power of your attention, which you were basically alluding to just a moment ago. And also frequency and just a bunch of other things on dreams as well. Reincarnation, future trends, books,
10 books in all.
Numerology. By the way, speaking of numbers, I want to kind of get into this some of this aspect of reincarnation and connect that with future trends. But numerology has always intrigued me, and I remember when I was working for the Christian radio station, I heard a phrase that actually was perplexing to me because Christians were using it. They were talking about it. And I thought, wait a minute, this doesn't jibe with all of the other stuff that you're talking about, and from my perspective at the time. And that was sacred geometry. And I'm going, sacred geometry? What the heck is sacred geometry? And then, of course, it was explained to me. And then I came across, for the first time in my life, 25, 30 years ago, actually, if not longer, I came across the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life. And I was staring at it one day, and all of the sudden, I saw something that I thought, wow, really? If you look at the Tree of Life, and you take a look at the bow view, looking at the bow to the stern of the original series Starship Enterprise, you will see a portion of the Tree of Life. I kid you not. And
interesting.
When I saw that, I'm thinking, did Roddenberry consciously do that, or was that a subconscious thing? I mean, I picked up on it almost immediately. But I also, getting to the whole aspect of numerology as well, and I know that I can't remember the name of it now, kinesthetics, I think, where I see letters and numbers as colors. In color.
Oh, yes. That's synesthesia.
Synesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
Synesthesia. And, and I've always done that. And then when I start putting those letters and numbers together to make words or sequences or calendar dates, for example, months of the year have a particular tone. Days of the week, because their letters have a particular tone or hue and so forth, because of the combination of these colors. And then, of course, you have numerology where you're putting numbers together. And I often am curious when people start putting numbers together, they'll add up, for example, whatever today's date is. You know, one big famous date for me was 1010 because I was working for a radio station whose frequency was 1010 kilohertz. And then whatever the year was, you know, 89 or 2002
well,
or whatever.
My book launched yesterday, 10-10-2017. And if you add that up, it's 1-1, 10, you know, 10 is 1, and 2017 is 1. So it was 1-1-1, which is all about initiating new things.
Well, now, I find that interesting because on that date also in 2003 was the passing of a very dear friend of mine, who actually passed away in my home. My wife came home and so forth and saw him there. And the long and the short is he was declared brain dead. And we said our goodbyes. And I was probably the most traumatic and emotional period I've ever experienced of someone passing, who was very near and dear to both my wife and I. But that date comes around, and you know, all day long, that's kind of what I was thinking about. I wonder where he is, what is he doing, and so forth. But I also like the way that looks, October 10th, 10-10. It's just a neat looking thing. And I even thought about it in the context of Roman numerals, XX, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm always looking for patterns and this kind of stuff. Numerology, if we can jump into that for just a moment. What is it about numerology that is appealing, intriguing, fascinating to you?
I have been drawn to it since I was a kid and to numbers in general. But what I think now is that They are vibration, basically. Each number is a kind of vibration, which is energy. It's, in other words, it's a kind of energy and it's a kind of consciousness. And when you take the 1 through 9 and make it into a cycle of growth, because 10 becomes 1 again, 11 becomes 2 again, you know. So everything goes back to the basic 9 units. And that is a creative cycle. And each number represents a kind of action, consciousness, energy that then progresses into the next one and the next one and the next one, very naturally so. And if you understand how that works and the logic of it, it's actually very logical, then you understand so much about cycles and the inner levels of the way the universe works, I think. And then you look at astrology, and that's all cycles as well. It's 12 instead of 9, but it has the same kind of idea of cyclical patterns. And so I'm not sure exactly why numerology works, but letters and numbers are connected. Letters have a sound. The sound has a vibration. The vibration is connected to a number and so forth. And so when you go into things like numerology and feel a number, feel into a number, you move into a almost like sacred geometrical pattern of consciousness that is a revelation of a certain kind of knowledge. You know, one of the most sacred symbols which represents transformation is the Star of David, where you have two trinities with a dot in the center and a circle around the outside. And what that really symbolizes is the heaven and earth coming together and merging into one thing. And that's the vertical transparency, right? Where the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, or whatever you want to call that higher one, merges with the body, mind, spirit of the personality. And you say, oh my gosh, I am the soul. I'm connected to everything in the universe. This is my big body. And then the dot in the center of that represents the individual self, and the circle around the outside represents the universal self, so that I am both at once. Mm. I am me and I am us. And that is a symbol that has so many levels of revelation to it that, you know, you have to work with that for quite a while to understand that it's a process, you know. And so many symbols are geometric patterns like that, just like tankas and mandalas in Tibet. Those are geometric, sacred geometries that represent actually processes of self-development and enlightenment.
Do you think that in that context, that certain events are drawn to certain dates and times?
Yes, absolutely. I think we incarnate, for instance, on the birth date or the time that we want to come in. like my sister's a month premature. She needed a certain birth date. She was going to get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it just naturally synchronizes with the complex pattern that you as a soul want to create in this particular incarnation, that it helps set up the forces, the patterns, the evolutionary unfolding of what you want. And there are many of these that all overlap. You know, we have all the personality typing systems and astrology and numerology and Enneagram and name and birth date and all these things, you know. And they all weave together to help us create the lifetime we want to have in order to evolve the way we are seeking to evolve.
Mm. It makes me think, of course, of some significant dates in history, for example, and, of course, one in particular. I mean, we all are familiar with dialing on the phone when there's an emergency, a 911, and then what could be conceived of, in our modern day anyway, as the one of the greatest emergencies happened on September 11th or 9/11, and then of course, you know, you pull out any of the others. Then when you mentioned about, you know, your sister, I thought about my birth date, and thinking that's interesting that I would have chosen to come in 6/26/60, you know, mm-hmm. three sixes. But then I thought, well, now wait a minute, do I leave the 19 out or do I leave it in? You know, those. That's the other aspect of it, too, is depending upon who you talk to, well, you leave the 19 in. Oh, no, you don't have to leave the 19. It's fine.
You do. You do.
And then, of course,
you
when I did
every
the
single number.
Yeah. When I did the math, it comes out to a 3. I mean, with the 19, it comes out to a 3, if I'm doing the math correctly. And I was fairly good in math.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So anyway, it's just very interesting how, you know, all of these things, they all work in such an incredibly synchronistic way that you know, it sort of almost defies, sometimes defies logic or reason
or
anything.
The limitation of the left brain, where it's just seeking to understand everything in this rather small, proven way. When you go in to start contemplating, I call it the perfect fit. Do you know, it's kind of like things are so well engineered by the collective consciousness or the flow or the divine or whatever you want to call this higher consciousness, that everybody's life purpose, if you are unfolding it, feeds everybody else's life purpose. And that, for that reason, I've really seen that things like self-sacrifice are not very noble anymore. That's an old religious idea that was probably meant to help people, you know, find a sense of open-mindedness. But right now, it causes us to not express ourselves authentically.
You know, you talk about self-sacrifice. Every time I hear that word, it reminds me of my parents. And I remember sharing with my with some friends here. I'm a family of I got a brother and four sisters, and you know, my parents had six kids. And man, your folks must have sacrificed a lot. And I remember thinking about that for a long time until I had the great opportunity of interviewing them on this program. And I asked them about that. I said, "Did you guys sacrifice anything?" And they said, "No. We knew what we wanted," in reference to a large family. We wanted a large family. There was no sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we wanted. And so now I think about that in the context of what you're speaking to and thinking, well, today, sacrifice doesn't have to be about giving something up. It's about making a choice to go a particular way. Ergo, there is no sacrifice. You've chosen to go this way. Okay, so if I'd gone the other way, I would have gotten the Lamborghini. But I'm going this way because it feels right. So
and you could still get the Lamborghini.
I could.
Depending on what you choose
exactly
to do. You know, and I think that there's something with the self-sacrifice that almost is parallel with this idea of postponement of the self. You know, like we're waiting for later.
Yeah.
Or waiting for conditions to be right. Or waiting for permission from somebody or something to make it okay for us to go ahead and be successful or to show up in the world more or to, you know, this goes back to transparency in a way, because part of it is allowing yourself to be exposed and to show up for what you are and let people see it, you know, and not to be afraid of your own light, to allow yourself to receive all the higher energy of the higher self, which, you know, you probably know as well as I do that when you get a wave of that acceleration coming in, it can be quite disorienting and agitating and upsetting and very unconsciously so.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't sleep, or like I found myself on a couple of these waves this year, which has been a very big year for downloads
yeah.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just eating a lot of carbohydrates or something. Like I have to have pasta or I have to do this and slow down, you know.
How funny. I've been craving and feeding that craving from time to time with pie, cherry pie or whatever. Because I've always loved pie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I mean, there's nothing bad about it, but it's like when somebody said to me, "I think we're afraid of our own light," I went, "Oh my gosh, that that is so true."
Yeah.
And it's so unconscious because the ego thinks that if you let all this light in, it's going to disrupt everything that I've got set up that's made us secure so far. So you don't want to rock the boat, you know. And yet, when you do allow yourself to, you almost have to let go of your grip on life, you know. Go into that liminal space a little bit and relax so that the body can just, you know, just adjust itself quickly. It's like shuddering, you know, you just, and you go into the new vibration. like a dog shaking off the water.
That's interesting.
That's why I think also when we're getting a download of the new higher frequency, often I find I end up taking a nap in the afternoon. Like I can't stay awake. I must like conk out, you know.
Yeah.
A friend calls that my coma nap, you know, where you just suddenly bonk in for 20 minutes or whatever and then come to again. And I think a lot of that happens when we get the left brain out of the way. That it's that conscious mind that has all the right ideas and the definitions, you know, that keeps the adjustments from happening.
You know, I have struggled with the aspect of this in terms of, you know, the phrase that you quoted, you know, we are either afraid of or don't want to see our own light. I was talking with somebody the other day about this. I said, you know, over the years, I have gathered up and put into this euphemistic toolbox all kinds of tools. I've got a just unbelievable collection of tools at my disposal that I have put together up to this point. But I can't figure out why I haven't been able to build something beyond where I am right now. And part of what you were just talking about made me think that, well, the ego is thinking that I should be somewhere other than where I am right now, that I should be up higher at a higher level somewhere. But there's another part of me that also acknowledges, and I use the example of our actual winding up in Santa Barbara, that sometimes you just have to be patient because it's divine timing. You can have all the tools you want, but if it's not time for you to build whatever it is you're supposed to build with those tools, you better not try to build it, or you could do yourself more harm than good. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's one part of it. Timing, I think, is also part of the intuition that you can sense when it's time to do something, sense when it's not. And that's not procrastination. It's just a sense of when to move on something. But the other part of this is that, like, for instance, with your thing where you've created this particular way of doing your work or Santa Barbara or whatever it is, that there's a part at the end of each creation cycle where we need to experience what we've created and be happy about it and say, look at what I just created. This is the completion of what I had thought of years ago. And I did it. This is great. This is cool. And now it's not that it's wrong, which is often what we do. We think, well, this is wrong now because I'd rather be over here. It's that I'm getting new ideas. So you have to let yourself have a blank space. I call that the liminal space, where you let go of identifying with your story, you know, with the whole definition that you've created. Let it dissolve back into the field. Let yourself go back into the imaginal realm and allow a new pattern to be presented to you from the higher beings, which you are one, you know. And you can't get that idea unless you get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about you in particular, but we...
Sure.
We have to go into silence in order to enter the right brain and the imaginal realm. You can't do it with the left brain yakety yakking at you all the time.
Right.
You know.
Right. Very interesting. Transparency is the title of the latest work, and it is Penny Pierce that we're talking with. She's also written Frequency and a whole bunch of other stuff, especially on, I like this, the 10th insight on future trends as well as on reincarnation. Return of the Revolutionaries, which I think is pretty accurate.
That's
these
an
days.
Interesting book. It's on reincarnation.
Yeah, on reincarnation, and I have to say that with what I have been gathering from people, and you talked about your experiences as well, in regards to the younger set, the earlier generations, if you will, or those that are coming behind me and you. Who have a little different mindset, and I'm not talking about those who have their faces stuck in their screens, but I'm talking about those people, those young people who actually have become very thoughtful, very compassionate, very concerned about, and are very interested in moving forward and not going backward. In terms of the example that was shared with me about the young people do not want to take on their parents' stuff.
Well, it's so unreal to them.
Yeah.
This is partly because, you know, when they do come in, they are connected to the soul. And, you know, when you identify as the soul, soul doesn't understand fear. It's not in the reality of soul. So when you become the soul, you don't create fear.
Yeah.
And so when you see other people doing all these behaviors like secrets and lies and hiding and masks and avoidance and, you know, control, mm-hmm. you're going, wow, that is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, why would I want to do that? And that's what a lot of these kids are. You know, it's like, why do you guys want to have that reality? That's so silly.
Yeah.
You know,
I myself must be between generations in the middle somewhere, because there are times, more times than not, I don't want to deal with the drama. I don't even want to watch the drama on TV. Give me comedies. Give me cartoons. I'll take a weepy story. Okay, fine. You know,
yeah,
I'll
Hallmark watch, Channel.
Yeah, I'll watch Little House on the Prairie and just make sure I have a box of tissues. I don't want to see the horror and the devastation. I don't want to watch documentaries about the Holocaust. I acknowledge it happened. It was an atrocious thing. I get that. But we've been awful to one another for millennia. Okay.
Yeah,
I don't need to reinforce those images in my head. I know that they exist. And
I'm with you on that.
I wish absolutely. They didn't, but they do. But I don't need to keep looking at them.
I don't need that to become compassionate.
I've
done that part of it. I'm sure we've all experienced that ourselves to the nth degree anyway.
Yeah. And at the same time, it's so easy to get drawn into the emotional whirlpool of what's going on today with whatever situation. For example, when we had to evacuate from the fire a few months back, certainly I was very concerned. I wanted to make sure that we got everybody out of there safe the best we could and so forth, and we did. And we spent about 10 days so to speak, on the road. We slept in three different hotels, and then a friend opened their home up to us for the last 2 days. And I thought of it as a staycation. I still had to go to work. Okay, it was a working staycation, but I looked at it from that perspective. And so I said, you know, whatever's going to happen up there is going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. So I'm going to try to enjoy this experience down here, whatever it is, and try not to think about what's going on up there. I'll deal with that if and when I have to. And now here I am on the other side post, but now I'm hearing the stories of all these other folks, and certainly my heart goes out to them, but I don't want to get too caught up in the emotion of it all, because there isn't anything I can do about it. I can only deal with it after the fact. In terms of, is there anything I can do to help? How can I support them? How can I be of, what's the best form of service that I can provide for these folks up and down the California, up and down California? And that's just one example. What about Puerto Rico or Florida or Texas or wherever the disasters are around the world? It doesn't do me any good. But yet again, as I was saying, we tend to get drawn into that emotional whirlpool.
Well, I think that, you know, there's, when we feel other people suffering, we are connected to them because they aren't outside of us. They are us. Mm-hmm. We're suffering sort of with them, but the old separation, you know, feeling perception based on separation makes it seem like we need to rescue them, you know, because then we'll feel better if they feel better. And I think that you can't, like, you could send money to Puerto Rico mm-hmm. or give people money, but if they're not getting out of the consciousness of limitation or victimization, mm-hmm. it's hard for them to grow, you know. And yet at the same time, you have to ask yourself each time, what do I feel I can contribute that feels right for me? Maybe I will donate, you know, to something, clothes mm-hmm. or something useful. Maybe I will go around and do public speaking on the subject, whatever is right for you in your own self-expression.
Right.
Each time there are no rules. You, at each situation, you see what you can do.
Yeah.
If you feel like it, if it feels right.
Exactly. I remember seeing a piece on donations, just as a sidebar. And this is to me is extremely important for people to understand. And that is, hey, it's wonderful that you want to give all these things. Okay. That's great. But they did, and this was really kind of a profound thing. They the tsunami that hit, I think it was the day after Christmas 2005, I think it was, in Indonesia. And they said that the tsunami that swept across the islands was one thing, but it was the tsunami of things that people sent that couldn't even be used. It was given out of the kindness of the heart, but there wasn't a whole lot of thoughtfulness in that regard. And so a lot of the stuff that was sent was left on the beach just to rot.
Like in Puerto Rico, where they can't get the water and stuff to people because the roads are closed and they're not doing the first things first.
Yeah. So it's important to be conscious of what is the situation that you're wanting to help out, and really think about what's the best way that I can support them. The best way, not, oh, I got all this stuff over here, and I'll clear out a spot in my garage, and I'll be helping these people at the same time. No. That's you really need to be very thoughtful about something like that. And sometimes it is just money, you know. Just go ahead and donate online to the particular Red Cross or whatever the outlets are, the service organizations are, and then they'll take it from there and do the supporting in, so to speak, in your name through that energy that you are putting forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
This is very fascinating, and we always never have enough time. to go through all the things that we'd like to, but I'm hoping that we've at least sparked some very interesting conversation with folks. I do want to ask you about one person in particular, just because of what I read, and especially because how I feel on my end. Can you tell us about one of the most important people in your life? The person you dedicated this book to, your mother?
I came out to Florida from California because she was getting sick, and I had a couple of really valuable years helping her before she died at the end of 2015. We were squared to each other astrologically and everything. You know, we were at odds and both really strong and yet really similar at the same time. And I think she taught me an incredible amount about discipline and work and inspiration. And especially as she got sick, and she lived to 93 and cured herself of four kinds of cancer. But there was something about her spirit and her will and her ability to focus her mind on healing herself that was phenomenal. So many things that, you know, when I think about her, I think what a great example she was of so many high level principles without being really spiritual herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, I would recommend folks pick up a copy of Transparency, Seeing Through to
Our Expanded Human Capacity. I mean, it's all about seeing through, right?
Yeah.
You know, to anything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Being seen through.
and we will make it. And the other thing that always has struck me about these kinds of conversations and the things that come up is that in most instances, there's very little that we can do about the present day circumstances. There's nothing we can do to change those kinds of things on the grand scale. All right. I want to end the conflict in the Middle East, and I can do that today. I mean, you know, let's not. It used to be said that, you know, you want to solve all the world's problems. Well, how do you do that? It's so monumental. Start small. Solve the problems in your own life. Start there on those little things. And then you can work up to those other things. But the other aspect of it is that you can't change a lot of that stuff, that certain things are just going to happen. And I love a great line. I think it's a great line from this other television show. God, we live through TV too much. about how it's not the circumstances in life that form you, I think is how it goes, but it's how you deal with them that makes you who you are, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the fires, it's not the floods, it's not the hurricanes, it's not the political unrest, it's not anything out there outside of yourself that makes you who you are. It's who you are and how you respond to, if you will, what's going on the outside. And doing that inner work is so critical. That's one of the things that's fascinated me so about some of the books I've read over the years, Penny, and is that's the focal point. I loved John Noe's book, Apocalypse Conspiracy, and all the research that he did showed him that Christianity was not an external experience. It was all internal. And most of these spiritual practices and philosophies are. And when we start doing that and we go running around on the inside trying to find ourselves, we will. And that's the really cool thing. Transparency, seeing through to our expanded human capacity. Penny Pierce and pennypierce.com. That's PennePeiRce. R-C-E. It's usually the other way, but not in this case. The E, I before E, except after C, unless it's in Pierce, as in Penny Pierce. EIRCE.com. So we'll be linked to your website again as well, and we encourage people to pick this book up in particular. Being transparent in a transparent world is an idea whose time has definitely come. So let's all keep working on that. Penny, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Richard. It's good to be back.
This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.